Well, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this workshop and for the opportunity to speak here.
You have to shout.
Okay, I'll try. Today I'll be talking about the hydrodynamics of non-extremal brains and string theory and what holographically dual theories, which are usually string theories in the New Horizon backgrounds, can say about the hydrodynamics. Can I erase this? For my own contribution to this program consists of a paper which I wrote with Andrei Starinets. We posted it on the archive roughly a month ago. It's called The Silence of the Little Strings. But as an introduction and motivation, is it all right? As an introduction and motivation, I will also talk about other people's work. So the plan of my talk is going to be the following. So first I'll remind you what we can expect from hydrodynamics. Then I'll talk about the hydrodynamics of N equals 4 theory and what the holographic dual, which in this case is going to be supergravity and ADS5, can say about this theory. In particular, I'll review the calculation of transport coefficients from a holographic point of view. The issues that I'm going to mention here are the ratio of viscosity over entropy density, which is computable from supergravity. Then
ratio of viscosity.
Of viscosity to entropy density.
Entropy density.
Which is computable in supergravity. Then I'll talk about conjectured lower bound on this ratio and some experimental results which may be relevant to this bound. And I'll also try to motivate why adding string. So this is all just supergravity, and I'll also try to motivate why studying string theory, adding string theory to the picture, is an interesting thing to do. So what I'm going to talk next is a system of NS5 brains at finite temperature. And so third motivation. And then I'll say a few words about little string theory and its thermal properties. Well, little string theory is precisely the theory which lives on these NS5 brains. So it will be useful to have a short discussion before we talk about hydrodynamics. Then I'll try to give you a flavor of the computation that we've done to compute transport coefficients in little string theory at finite temperature. So I'll talk about the dual string theory and the computation of the two-point function in this dual string theory. And then finally, I'll mention some interesting issues and open problems. So this is a plan. Well, let me start by saying that hydrodynamics is an effective theory which describes processes which happen on the characteristic length scales larger than the microscopic length scale of the system, of the interactions in the system, which is usually set by temperature. On the other hand, we of course want this. So this is the scale where hydrodynamics is a good description, and we certainly want the scale to be smaller than the characteristic size of the system for translational invariants. So from here, one can immediately conclude that if we try to write down hydrodynamics of usual Schwarzschild black hole, we are not likely to succeed, because the size of the horizon of the Schwarzschild black hole is precisely of order 1 over temperature. So for Schwarzschild black hole, L is of order 1 over temperature. So both sides of this inequality are of the same order. So it's unlikely that there will be a sensible hydrodynamics.
Yet people claim to in the membrane theorem, don't they?
Yeah, but didn't they get some strange results?
To me, yes, but still they claim to do it.
Okay, so, but if we consider black brains instead, then we certainly, well, at least we can expect that hydrodynamics will be a good description at low energies. Now, in the talk, I will have I will define quantities which I call cross Q and cross omega, which I define like so, where Q is the momentum of the hydrodynamic excitation, and omega is the frequency. So the statement that so this statement implies that both Q crossed and omega crossed are much smaller than one. Now let me write down the equation which is called constitutive relation, and which essentially encodes the linearized hydrodynamics of any system. It relates the spatial components of Stefan-Tensor tensor to the components which have one temporal index. So it's basically well, this equation appears in textbooks, so it relates, if you wish, Kij, the Stefan-Tensor tensor, to the derivatives of the velocity or derivatives of the momentum density. And it's given by this formula. This is zeta over st, and then the structure, the index structure, is the same as here. Okay, so now I'll define these variables that appear in this equation for you. So vs squared is the speed of sound squared, which is just dp over d epsilon. Epsilon is the energy density in the system, and delta epsilon is the departure from the equilibrium of the energy density. Eta is the shear viscosity. S is the entropy density, T is the temperature. D here is the number of spatial dimensions. And zeta is the bulk viscosity.
It's
what? The bulk viscosity.
Bulk viscosity.
Well, it's basically the most general formula that you can write for the relation between Tij and T0j. Now, and there is, of course, also conservation of Stassinger tensor. Now, observation that you can make is if the theory is conformal, then the stress energy tensor is traceless, and so zeta equals zero. So in conformal theories, bulk viscosity is zero.
Will you help us see why Vs squared is the speed of sound? Vs is the speed of sound? I guess we just write down dv t mu equals zero and we discover the speed of sound.
Yeah. Okay, now, what are possible solutions of these two equations? Well,
so what's the physical meaning of bulk viscosity, actually?
Well,
shear viscosity is viscosity between.
Okay, good. So shear viscosity is, well, you know from textbooks, from physics textbooks, it really is this formula. So if you have the typical, example that is mentioned in the textbook, is if you have two planes and liquid between them, and one plane is stationary and the other is moving with velocity v, and the distance between them is d.
That's shear viscosity.
Well, I'm just reminding. Then the force which acts on the unit. So the viscosity, the velocity profile in the liquid is going to be roughly linear, and the force that acts on the unit area of the plane is going to be proportional to shear viscosity times the derivative of v. So that's the physical meaning of the shear viscosity. Now, the bulk viscosity, I think you can think of as the renormalization of pressure.
Of what?
Of pressure.
Of pressure?
Yeah.
But there's no eta term in the stress energy term? Stress energy
itself? Yeah, yeah, it's the second term.
Sorry?
This is eta.
Oh, there is eta.
Okay, so these two equations have two types of solutions. If we assume that stress energy tensor, the components of stress energy tensor, behave like a plane wave, then there are two types of solutions. One is so-called shear mode, which satisfies this equation. So if you wish, the excitation is perpendicular to the direction of the wave. And for this excitation, the dispersion relation, the relation between omega and q, is equal to s I eta over s d q squared. So it's a pure dissipative mode. It doesn't propagate. So that you just get by using this condition and plugging the plane wave into these two equations. Now, from the boundary, from the field theory point of view, we can extract the viscosity over entropy ratio by computing the retarded Green's function in the field theory and looking at the poles of this correlator. Let me write it somewhere here. So let me, for simplicity, orient the wave vector along the z direction. So let me choose q b u times c hat. And also, let me take x to be any direction on the world volume, which is perpendicular to the z. Then the non-zero, then the components of T mu nu, which are non-zero in the excitation that satisfies this condition, are T z x and T zero x. I'm just trying to be very simple here. So we can compute Green's function which of course is a function of Q and omega. And Fourier transform it to momentum space. And we are going to observe poles of this type. So up to some coefficients, this Green's function is predicted by hydrodynamics to have pole in the lower complex plane. Now there is a second mode which solves these equations, which is called the sound mode. And the components, so for sound mode, the momenta are oriented parallel to the wave vector. So these are non-zero components for the shear mode, and for sound mode, the non-zero components are going to be, so this is shear, and for sound mode, the non-zero components are going to be TZZ and T not Z. And yeah, T zero zero. Yeah, that's right. So the system of equations will involve two equations. One of them will be for this T zero zero thing. The dispersion relation for the sound mode takes more interesting form. And in the regime where we are working, the corresponding Green's function is going to have two poles. One is can you see here? So now it's not precisely a dissipative mode because and there is a real part here which is given by speed of sound. So this is the sound mode. So one is this and another is the same but with the negative sign in front of speed of sound. Yeah, I'll
go to write. Could you write it as omega squared minus v squared q squared plus I gamma times something? I mean, I'm just asking what it looks like in the three-dimensional rotation wave gradient.
So, what was the...
Well, I don't know. To write it that way, what is Q exactly? Is Q the absolute value of the three-vector Q?
Yeah.
Can you just write it with Q? Can you write the equation with Q as a three-vector?
Uh-huh. Well, I think the...
I guess not, because which component of T mean any vector depends on Q?
Well, okay, so the invariant form of the equation for omega is going to look like this. Omega squared plus I gamma q squared omega plus v squared. Zero. So that's the invariant form.
Isn't there a gamma squared term? Or you're dropping that? And it's Vs squared.
Well, we are dropping all the terms,
okay,
which are
Q to
the
fourth. Squared, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, sorry, it's Vs squared. Yeah. So when we are solving these equations, we are getting poles of this form.
Isn't the sign wrong there?
Yeah.
Minus
Vs
squared
Q squared. Uh-huh. Well. Okay, so gamma zeta over s plus 2 minus 2 over d eta over s. So that's the formula for gamma, if I remember correctly. Now if we can compute these Green's functions and...
Is it s or st?
That's st, thank you. Now, if we can compute these Green functions and find their poles, we can determine both the ratios eta over s and zeta over s. And people did this, well, more precisely, Policastro, Son, and Starinets did this for n equals 4 super n mils. They computed this correlator using ADS-FT correspondence. So they did it in gravity. Now, their motivation was the following. So, the eta of s for weakly coupled super n mils behaves, it's very, very high. In fact, if you ask yourself a question, what is eta of s for ideal gas, it's going to be directly proportional to the mean free path. So for non-interacting ideal gas, the viscosity is going to be huge. And in weakly coupled super n mils, this A to S ratio behaves like 1 over lambda squared. So it's very large. But it would be interesting to compute this ratio in the regime of strong coupling. So what they found is that this ratio approaches the value of 1 over 4 pi. And
The horizontal axis is lambda for you?
Sorry?
The horizontal axis
yeah,
is lambda?
Yeah, the horizontal axis is lambda, right. So, and the correction, the finite lambda correction to the statement were computed by Bouchelieu, Starinets, and this correction was found to be positive. So one, by looking at this graph, they conjectured that there is a universal bound on the ratio eta over s. And in all systems in nature, it's always greater than or equal to 1 over 4 pi. They also said that the equality is achieved when the system is at infinite coupling, which is certainly true here. So the gauge theory, lambda is a toothed coupling.
There's this one, so you don't really mean an infinite coupling. It comes back to itself, right? You mean the toothed coupling or physical coupling? Physical coupling goes to infinity, is equivalent to the original one, so it's going to go backwards up.
Well, it's a toothed coupling. So.
So, but that cannot be a universal statement. There cannot be any monotonicity by Yeskov.
Well, what happens if you have finite temperature theory? Can we still claim that there is an S-duality?
The S-duality is there. It should act on temperature. I mean, yeah, of course. You can take temperature, electric or magnetic.
I think the claim would be that for any given N, you can't saturate this bound. Because if you take the coupling to infinity, you would be weakly coupling N. But when N is larger and larger, you could get closer and closer to getting to 4 pi. In other words, I think the claim would be that if N is a million, if you plotted A over S as a function of G squared, it would be very large, both weak and strong. I would have the minimum, which according to the claim would be bigger than 1 over 4 pi. But the value of the minimum would go to 1 over 4 pi as A over 2.
Yeah. But my question was, what happens, forget about varying n, fix n to be 5, and that's the varying g string.
I was just trying to explain some of the statements that would agree with this and also with Eskimo.
Well, these statements, I think, are made in the regime where n is strictly infinite. Yeah, that's right.
So if n is infinite, you can't really ask about Eskimo, but Perman wants to have Eskimo. So take n to be a million. Then you have a plot, which would look like what he's drawn up to very large lambda, but would eventually go back.
Right.
So its minimum would be, according to the conjecture, bigger than 1 over 4 pi, but would be close to 1 over 4 pi then as large.
Okay. Thank you.
So there's no reason for monotonicity in A over S, that was my...
There's no reason what?
There's no reason for monotonicity in A over S as a function of lambda.
Yeah.
Can I ask something else? You're working in a regime where Q and omega must be very small. And if I look at the formula for the pole there, that means that eta over S should also be small. Now, for small values of lambda, that's not the case. Or am I confusing something?
Well, there's also T.
Well, one of the T must also be...
But wait a minute, we don't know anything about that. We know that Q and omega are small, but don't know
the statement is just
how
this
they
is
run.
True if Q is small enough. So whatever A over S is, when Q is small enough, it's more momentous. What you're saying about Sapone, for an almost ideal gas, hydrodynamics is only valid in the very long wavelengths, because the mean free path is very large. You have to go to larger wavelengths to use hydrodynamics.
Okay, so so this ratio, this 1 over 4 pi, has also been computed in other gravitational systems. So not only for non-extremal D3 brains, but also for M2 and M5 brains. And it seems to be a universal result in supergravity.
Is there any physical model other than ADS-CFT? Where that value has been computed?
Well, I'm going to talk about that. It's not precisely ADS-CFT, it's little string theory. And the dual is non-conformal.
Well, I had my... Well, I was trying to ask whether there was anything that has nothing to do with string theory, which is giving value 1 over 4 pi. Somebody might try to make a model of the fluid based on some simple astrology
Uh-huh.
Is there a completely different current?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any calculation of the sort. So, well, one argument for this ratio being 1 over 4 pi in gravity is using the Kuba formula for viscosity and relating this Kuba formula for the absorption cross-section of graviton at zero frequency. and that is in turn related to entropy, and so we get a relation between viscosity and entropy, and that turns out to be 1 over pi. The people also, I think Kovtun, Sun, and Starinets, they use membrane paradigm approach to derive, so they consider some degrees of freedom which live on the stretch horizon, and they derive the formula for precisely this ratio. And Buchel later proved that this ratio is indeed 1 over 4 pi.
You're referring to very recent papers?
Well, this paper by Kovtun, Sun, and Starinets is from 2003, so it's 2 years ago.
This paper by who?
Kovtun, Sun, and Starinets. Kovtun.
You write the name?
So it's from 2003. That's a paper where they wrote a formula from the membrane paradigm point of view and also conjectured the lower bound on the viscosity of entropy ratio. So natural question that one may ask is what happens as string theory comes into play. So instead of just doing gravity calculations, can we do string theoretic calculations? If string theory is a good theory of quantum gravity, then we should observe some hydrodynamic behavior. And another motivation is, I also should mention perhaps that people who study quark gluon plasma at Rigg claim that they observe that these fireballs, lumps of quark gluon plasma, are described well by hydrodynamics, and the viscosity of entropy ratio for them is very low. So if you believe this bound on viscosity of entropy, then in some sense this quark gluon plasma is ideal fluid.
So
I think it's actually in for all normal systems it saturates this bound. For example, water under normal conditions, this bound is saturated I think to 500 times. This ratio is 500 times greater than the bound.
So you don't mean saturated?
Sorry. it's high. I don't remember the numbers.
But you say at Rigg they claim to find this?
Yeah.
What value do they have there?
Well, 1/10.
1/10, wow, close to this.
I don't think it's well accepted that they have a measurement, or even that they can say that viscosity isn't zero.
Well, I said they claim that they're getting it over has to be 1 over 10, roughly, but whether or not...
Well, 1 over 10 plus or minus whatever 10.
Okay, so, yeah, and what did I want to say? Oh, yeah, so another motivation for studying string theoretic models in this context comes from the fact that we intuitively don't really expect QCD to be well described by, or more interesting, well, more easy theories like n equals 1, supersymmetric n-mils, but we don't expect them to be described by string theory. And the usual argument is that in QCD there is no hierarchy of scales. There is a scale lambda, and all excitations are of order lambda, globals. While if supergravity is a good description, there is a hierarchy of scale. The mass of the string must be much larger than the characteristic scale of the background where supergravity propagates. And in the known models, which realize n equals 1 super n-mils, for example, one always introduces some scale where extra degrees of freedom come into play. And when the ratio of this scale to lambda QCD is much larger than 1, which, of course, what we want for super anmeals, the super guide is not a good description, and one must work in string theory. So with this motivation, we consider the model where all alpha prime corrections are under control. And this model is a stack of NS5 brains, of K NS5 brains at finite temperature.
Maybe I can ask you a question before we go on. Can one probe, first of all, I don't really understand why it's either of us that appears in these orbits. For that, I guess we have to go over the derivation from V mu T mu and see that the constant multiplying the derivative of T zero j is actually
Good. So I think it's just a statement that usually the viscosity appears in the formula of this type. Now, this is, of course, the momentum density. So the question is how the momentum density is related to the velocity. And the relation is where epsilon is this energy density and P is the pressure.
Yeah.
And then pressure is D energy over ds. So this must be entropy times temperature times velocity. So it does reduce to the...
Okay, that's nice. But that means that this bound on 8 over s can be discussed without mentioning s, really. It's an upper bound. If we go back to the formula, that's fine. I wonder if we can construe it as follows. This is simply an upper bound on what G is at mag equals 0 for very small q.
It's an upper bound on what G is when omega equals 0 for very small q.
That's my question.
Yeah.
Is, in other words, is this bound equivalent to the statement that G of q when 0 can be no bigger than 4 pi over q squared? 4 pi times the temperature of q squared.
I mean the whole, so when q squared, okay, so when q squared is 0, from this formula,
let's take q to be non-zero.
Okay, okay, good. Well, there is some coefficient here, some normalization coefficient.
Leaving aside the coefficient, is this entropy bound equivalent to the statements that g of 0 and q, or g of q and 0, as q goes to 0, is no bigger than a known constant times the temperature over q squared?
Well, from this formula, it seems like it's the case.
And the reason I wanted to set omega to 0 was I wondered whether we can formulate this bound in terms of Euclidean, equilibrium thermodynamics. In other words, if you really want to see the pole, then omega is in real time.
Mm-hmm.
Although, actually, the pole is for imaginary waves. That would take it back to Euclidean. It seems that you need a much more sophisticated machinery if you have to do this calculation in non-equilibrium thermodynamics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
What makes it seem interesting to me, it's very hard to express the entropy in terms of a correlation function. Actually, I misunderstood before hearing your lecture. I thought that eta could be fine in terms of correlation function, but it was hard to interpret s. But you're telling us that this balance is actually just a balance of the correlation function of the two-point function of the stress tensor.
Yeah. Well, but on the other hand, this bound, the bound in the form it's formulated, it can also be said that it's natural to inspect some sort of a bound from the 8 over S ratio because it's some generalized entropy bound. And,
you mean generalized bound on black hole entropy?
Yeah.
Attempts to discuss it that way weren't very convincing.
Well, there was never a precise derivation of this bound from this point of view. But, but if entropy appears somewhere, it's, one can speculate that this is the case. Yeah. Okay, so it indeed would be very interesting if this would be just a statement about the equilibrium system. Okay, so let me now talk about little string theory, since this is the theory which lives on five brains, and some important observations are going to be relevant for the hydrodynamics of NS5 brains at finite temperature. So little string theory is defined as a theory which lives on the world volume of five brains in the regime where coupling, the string coupling is sent to zero. So in this limit, gravity decouples, and one is left with a non-local theory in five brains. There is an alternative definition which involves formulating string theory on a singular Calabi-Yau and then taking, G-string to zero. So if we take K and its five brains, then in the low energy regime, this theory is going to reduce to 2,0 theory, or, well, it's going to be almost reduced to 2,0 theory, or six-dimensional n equals 1 super Yang-Mills, depending on the chirality of the underlying string theory. Now, this almost is going to be important in the following. There is a holographic description of this theory of LST, which is given by strings propagating in the near horizon geometry of NS5 brains. It involves these ingredients. It involves the flat Minkowski spacetime, the super parafermions at level k, and then a linear dilaton. Oh, sorry, thank you. Now, there is a problem with this description, because linear dilaton implies that the region where a string coupling is strong is not cut off. And, so one can... So the amplitudes will be sensitive to strong coupling region, and one can't really make quantitative statements. Well, there is a way to avoid the strong coupling problem by separating five brains from each other, or equivalently in the T-dual formulation, deforming the Calabi-Yau, and then sending the separation or deformation parameter to zero together with the string coupling. So this process modifies the holographically dual string theory to the theory where strong coupling problem does not arise. So one U1 from SU2 combines with the linear Dalton direction and creates a coset, SL2 mod U1, which asymptotically is linear Dalton across a circle. And there is, of course, some GSO projection acting on the space. Okay, so that's the theory of separated NS5 brains. But there is also an alternative way of avoiding strong coupling problem, and it involves considering NS5 brains and finite temperature. Now the metric, one can write down the metric for NS5 brains at finite temperature. I'm not going to do this for you. I'll just write down an expression for the energy density as a function of the horizon, the position of the horizon.
So you basically just detectify one dimension and use the gauntlet at all, each monopole metric?
Well, I thought the expression was essentially just modifying the usual metric for NS5 brains, like you would modify the metric for extremal D brain by finite temperature.
By making periodic.
Well, that happens. Yeah, eventually we will do this. So, but. So this is the expression for the energy density, and we're going to take the limit, g-string goes to zero, together with R0, which is the position of the horizon, also going to zero, so that the energy density is kept constant. And also we take the near horizon limit, and then we rotate the resulting metric to obtain a Euclidean metric. And what we get is what we get is this. Together with a dilaton, so this part, well, this is just a metric on a unit tree sphere. This is a flat Minkowski Euclidean metric on a five-dimensional flat space. And this part has a geometry of a cigar. So this part has a geometry of a cigar with a linear dilaton. But the slope of the dilaton is set by the level or the number of five brains, and the value of the dilaton at the tip of the cigar, phi naught, is given by this thing. Well, the important thing to remember is that the value of the dilaton is proportional to the energy density. Oh, the mu is this. So, for this metric to be non-singular, the periodic coordinate, the tau must be periodic coordinate with period 2 pi. So that implies that inverse temperature of the system, inverse Hawking temperature, is 2 pi times square root of k alpha prime. This beta h does not depend on the energy density. It only depends on k. Now, from the relation, ds by dE equals beta angular. So since beta now does not depend on energy, the entropy is going to have Hagedorn form. So there is a Hagedorn density of states in the system. All of this is said at the level of pure gravity. When string theory corrections are included, I should mention also that the thermodynamics of NS5 brains at finite temperature was analyzed in a nice paper which David Sahakian and David Kutasov wrote 5 years ago. Now, they also considered string corrections to the thermodynamics. So when string loop corrections are included, this formula is, this of course not an entropy, this is the density of states. So the entropy is a log. So density of states is modified by some power-like term. So in particular, this relation is modified to this is a relation between the energy and the temperature of the system. So if you're talking about in gravity, the temperature is independent of the energy. But when string loop corrections are included, if you compute the expectation value of the energy in the canonical ensemble with this density of states, you get this formula.
Alpha is strictly negative, right?
Yeah. So what David and David found is that alpha is negative. So the way they did it is they considered, the free energy of the system. Again, if you compute the free energy from the canonical ensemble with this density of states, it's going to have this form. Last terms that are suppressed in energy. Now, I think it's minus beta free energy. Now, from the point of view of string theory, the free energy should be equal to the string partition function. And of course, the genus zero partition function would not give this dependence on the energy, because it would behave like energy. But they showed that the genus zero partition function is actually zero. Now, genus one partition function is proportional to the volume of dilaton direction. And for those of you who have been to Eva's talk, remember that this volume of dilaton direction also appeared in her calculations. And this volume of dilaton direction is precisely this log E. So by computing string partition function, you can compute the value of alpha, and it turns out to be negative.
I would think that should strongly depend on what you take as your space. For example, for string theory, the eigenum behavior, that alpha depends on how many spaces, spatial dimensions you come back to find.
Yeah, that's...
So, typically, in fact, the value alpha equals to negative 1 is when you have everything compact on a torus, for example. And it looks like in your formula, alpha equals negative 1 plus spatial log 2. So, is that...
Well, it's negative, it's proportional to the volume, I think, of the space. So it's not... So this quantity is, of course, proportional to the 5 volume, to the world volume. So this one is essentially... So it's something like alpha prime to the relevant part of times 5.
Well, the case I just talked about, you compact by everything.
Uh-huh.
There's no volume left over.
Yeah.
So the leading behavior does not depend on the volume.
Well, actually, well, David probably remember better than I do, but I thought... when you compactify everything and send it to zero, it's still negative.
No, you do get negative number. I'm just saying that you get alpha as negative 1. In the case of string theory, I'm not talking about the little strings. Mm-hmm. In the case of string theory, the usual eigen behavior, you get alpha as negative 1 when you compactify everything universally with the coefficient 1 in mm-hmm. 1. In other words, density of states is DE over mm-hmm. E, which is invariant. Mm-hmm. It's a scale invariant statement.
Yeah.
Dimension is dimensionless.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a meaning to that coefficient being 1 times the U, so it's a universal leading behavior. Does that enter the story in any way?
Yeah, I don't think so. I thought it wasn't equal to minus 1, this alpha,
yeah.
Even if you compactify everything.
So it's minus 1?
No, I thought
it's not minus 1.
It's not.
What is it when you compact everything?
Well, it's some number.
It's some negative number of order 1, but not 1. Okay, so... From the fact that alpha is negative, we infer immediately that, well, we get this relation between energy and the temperature, and the graph which relates energy to the temperature is going to look like this. So this is energy, this is temperature, and when temperature goes to T. Hagedorn, approaches T. Hagedorn from above, energy goes to infinity. So we are studying this branch of this high energy branch of little string theory, where perturbative string description is good. Loop corrections would correspond to departing from T. Hagedorn and lowering energy density to be less than infinity. Now, one of course expects that there is some branch which originates at zero, and which describes the theory at low energies, which is the Super-Anne-Mills or 2.0 theory. So how these two branches are connected to each other is an interesting question. But we are studying this. So...
I would think if you actually put more than one correction in this second branch, this high energy branch, it will never appear. So if you start with zero energy and start increasing it, you will never get to this other branch.
Well, it's... Okay, it might be that from this branch you never get to that branch, but this gravity solution exists, and the string theory also exists. So whether these two branches are connected, I don't know. Now... Yeah, one thing to notice is that energy versus temperature relation here is very much like that of Schwarzschild black hole. So for Schwarzschild black hole in 4 dimensions, you would just have energy proportional to 1 over T. And here, T. Hagedorn, in some sense, plays a role of zero temperature. And the system also has negative specific heat in the regime where T equals to T. Hagedorn. So it's similar to Schwarzschild black hole. Okay, so now we compute these correlators in string theory at T equals to T Hagedorn and try to observe the hydrodynamic poles.
How much more time do you need to end?
Half an hour.
Okay, so why don't we take a 10-minute break and then continue?